Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Alexa, who is Adam Ferrara?
Adam Ferrara is an American actor and comedian known for playing the roles of Chief Needles Nelson on Rescue Me, Sergeant Frank Fiorelli opposite Edie Falco on Nurse Jackie. He was a co-host on the U.S. version of Top Gear. He has had 3 Comedy Central specials and his new album is called It's Scary in Here. Adam's new podcast is a big hit and available everywhere.
Sounds like it could be funny.
Sounds to me like 30 minutes you'll never get back.
Hi guys, thank you for joining us for the first time. We're checking us out again. Either way, we're glad you're here, and we have a great show for you this week. My guest in the ADD interview is the author of the book Get Ready. He is also the 2017 Jeopardy champion. It's Buzzy Cohen. And we want to welcome everyone from our Talk to Me Tuesday family, which is a conversation we have every week, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Go to my website, click the link, and join us. And our superfan shout-out is for Sherry Coons. Boys and girls, say hi to Sherry.
Hey, Sherry.
Hey, Sherry. What's happening, Sherry?
Sherry, those voices are the people I love. My beautiful wife, Alex.
Hello there.
My pal and pod producer, Marcus Stern.
My good friend. It's good to see you.
And, of course, my lifelong pal, Phil Tagg. How are you, pal?
Okay, Adam Ferrara.
There
What's
you go.
Happening.
Adam Ferrara.
That's right. And we are recording this show on Monday, and our guest is a Jeopardy champion. And it just so happens that Sunday, yesterday, Alex Trebek has passed away.
Yeah, very sad.
Very sad.
He was loved by many.
He was. He was 80 years old, though.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good run.
Yeah. I read that he went peacefully staring at the ocean on his favorite swing.
With his wife, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
That he was married to his wife, Jean, in 1990. So had 30
years?
Yeah,
I think 30 years, yeah.
30 years they were together?
It's a
great couple.
Yep. Yeah. 3 kids?
Mm-hmm.
3 kids. And the family actually had a very sweet tweet that I wanted to read to you. It says, "We are sad to announce the passing of Alex. He is no longer in pain, and we knew he was gone as soon as we heard."
Did you have to do that, Adam?
Yeah, I did.
I was saying, wow, is he actually going to get through this without a joke?
Mm-hmm. He'd probably laugh at that, too.
Yeah,
he would howl at that.
He would. I just read something as we're all reading about this. I guess there was some champions tournament that he came out to greet the contestants with no pants on.
Yeah.
Just for a laugh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He said that there's too much tension in the room.
Yeah. As if I didn't need another reason to love Alex Trebek. I mean, it's just.
Okay, do you guys know, I'm going to ask you guys a question. Do you know how many episodes Alex Trebek hosted of Jeopardy?
3.
Nope, more than 3.
I know he's been on for decades.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea?
This is why I would have been terrible on the game show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm already
I would have
nervous.
Had no guest.
Yeah.
Frozen.
Yeah.
You know why?
Know.
You guys weren't prepared for this question. Thank God. I have Buzzy Cohen on to tell you how to prepare.
My palms are sweating.
Your palms are sweating?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to put you guys out of your misery. 8,200 episodes, 37 seasons. He started the show in 1984, which is the most episode by any presenter of a single TV game show, according to a statement from Sony Pictures.
Cha-ching.
Wow.
Residuals.
Yeah, he did well.
Yeah.
He did very well. So mm-hmm. We're very happy for
yeah.
Alex.
Good. You know, he made being smart cool and profitable.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah. Well
he
put.
Did.
Yes,
well
he put. Did.
He was good.
Yes, he did. And you guys were sweating because you weren't prepared. You know who was prepared on the show?
Buzzy.
Buzzy Cohen. And one of the things that Buzzy said in the interview that was a phrase that really struck me was having a plan versus being prepared. And I went, oh, that's pretty good because I'm a planner. Mm-hmm. I always like to have a plan. In fact, boys, I always tell my wife, all right, you want the plan?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she
and I listen to the plan and I'm like, okay, I can put this there, as long as I'm here by then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I take your plan and kind of add to it.
Yeah. Yeah. She works around the plan.
Yeah.
But Mark, are you a plan? Are you a planner?
Professionally, I am. Because in the work I do with Kornheiser, you have to be prepared for a guest not to appear or for something to go wrong. And you have to be able to sort of in the back of your mind be like, okay, we were going to do this and now we can't. So we have to do this and this and this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Professionally, yes, I am. Personally, no, I'm a total mess.
I agree with that.
That's a contingency plan, though.
See, I learned to be prepared on Top Gear because I would have a plan. And then when I got in the car, I'm like, oh, I don't have any brakes. So I plan B.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Like, I think you and I work good together because I'm good at adapting. But you learned that on Top Gear.
Mm-hmm.
You had to adapt basically to survive.
Yeah, basically to survive. Not really adapt as much as looks like I'm slamming into Tana. Phil's a planner. I think you're a planner, Phil. You're always writing out your cards and stuff when you have to host a show.
Well, that's not. I don't think that's a plan. I think that's just doing the work, knowing that I have a, you know, if I'm whatever I'm hosting, if I, you know, if I want to be like what you said. I think that's more preparing than planning, wouldn't you?
No, because I wouldn't say that at all. Okay. Only because I know you. You have a plan, and if things don't work out, or you don't know what you it all goes to shit, and your head spins around, and you can't function.
He's a planner in denial.
He's a
yeah, I am.
Yeah, you have. But once things goes wrong, he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And because of that, he ends up hiding in a drugstore.
What?
Phil
what
ended
up hiding what is in that? A drugstore. Oh my!
Phil ended up hiding in a drugstore. We were at Rite Aid the other day.
Uh-huh. Oh God.
I can't leave you two alone.
No, we were out. We went to Izzy's. We had a nice breakfast at Izzy's. And then we were walking around. We're talking about a script. We had an idea we both liked. We were getting excited about it. Phil's following me and we're talking. He's very excited. He's animated. We're figuring out the next act and everything. Things are going well. I walked into a Rite Aid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need anything at Rite Aid. I figured there's got to be some fun in here. Let's see what we can do.
Oh, God.
So Phil's following me in the Rite Aid. We're talking and everything. And I see a long line at the prescription counter.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's waiting for their prescriptions. And next to that counter is the adult care aisle. So I walk into the adult care aisle with everyone looking at me. And Phil's between me and the people, and there's mm-hmm. people on the other side of me.
Mm-hmm.
So Phil's talking about something. I grab the biggest bundle of adult diapers I can. Mm-hmm. I turn to Phil, and I just said, what size are you again?
And I'm like, here we go. Okay. You didn't need anything in here at all, did you?
No.
You didn't need anything.
I didn't need anything. No, I just wanted to see what we could have some fun in here. And you froze.
Like a deer in headlights.
He just froze. And I said,
That's a great analogy. It's a deer in headlights. I'm like, oh, then I figure out, what am I going to do? How am I going to get out of this?
Yeah. So tell her what you did. You ran away.
I ran like it was a maze. I'm going from aisle to aisle to aisle. Where is he? I'm 9 years old running from my best friend. What is wrong with you?
He froze and he ran away and everyone was looking at us, right? And as he ran away, I was yelling, going, come on, don't be like that.
Yeah.
You said you would try. So he's running and he's on.
Meanwhile, Mark, people are like poking their heads out of the. What's going on? What's happening? Because you disrupt the norm. You disrupt the norm. It's like, you know what it is? It's like a fart in a church. You hear it immediately. What is that? What's going on? And everybody turns their head. And who do they look at? Me! I'm the one standing. No, it's him. He's got it. I don't know what to say.
And so they look at you because you were running away.
Yeah, I'm running away. It's him. You don't understand. What so are you doing? There's a pandemic.
I know.
So, please tell me that at least one person in the store came up to you and said, I suffer from this too, sir. Okay, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
No, they stay far away from me, Mark. They stay clear.
They didn't have.
They don't know what it is.
They didn't have any time, Mark, because he was running. They just saw a man running, and I was yelling.
They probably thought that crazy man needs diapers. Fast.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
yeah. He's look, running. All I know is every time Adam and I go into any public place and we leave, somebody's looking at camera footage. Some of the there's a security guy looking at camera. Look at these idiots. Look at this. Tom, get over here. Look at this. Look at these idiots.
So, Mark, I still got the giant bundle of adult diapers. I'm holding it as he's running away. Mm-hmm. So as he's running away, I see him go on one side. He's poking his head around the aisle to see where I am. I'm at, and I'm on the other side of the aisle, and everyone's watching us. And so as he pokes his head out, I just said, come on, think of me. Why don't you think I'm the one that's got to clean it up?
And then, no.
Of course you did.
And he runs. My God. He runs away. He runs to the next aisle. And there I am. I'm like, we just got new rugs. And he just keeps going.
And then at that point, the shift goes to me. Everybody looks at me at that point.
Of course.
Everybody. You know?
Of course.
They're staring right at me. What are you looking at? Just go get your Sucrets. Go do what you got to do.
He's yelling back at people. He's got his mask on, and he's hiding in the greeting card somewhere. I can't find him. I lost him. But I know there's only one way out, so I stand by the door because he's got to come out that way.
Right.
And I'm standing there still holding the adult diapers, and now people are looking at me, and I just burst into tears.
He starts crying.
Crying?
I started crying. Yeah, he throws on the acting switch and starts crying.
I was crying.
And I told the people, you know, he's an actor. You don't understand what he's doing. You don't know what he's doing. It's all an act.
I'm crying, and people in the line are looking at me, and I started apologizing. I said, I'm so sorry. We're under so much stress. I don't mean to disrupt your day. I'm just trying to make things better.
You know, Phil, they believed him. You know that,
100%.
Right?
They always believe him. And they look at me like it's me. What's wrong with that man? That's what I get all the time.
Next year at the Oscars, they're going to play a clip of that, okay?
Yeah.
I'm standing by the
edge. I'm telling you right now, I'm like, can't we just, I'm like Paul Giamatti in Sideways. Can't we just play golf and hang out and have a good time?
No.
Can't we just get some pens? Can't we just go into the grocery store or the drugstore and get some pens and leave?
No.
Like normal people?
Mm-mm, not a chance.
I'm standing there crying and apologizing, still holding the diapers, and he comes walking up. He's in a huff. He's just walking
like
this.
He's in a huff.
He's like, get up. He's right out. He runs out the door. I just turn around on the way out, and I go, think of the kids.
Yeah, that's what you said. Think of the kids. Now I made my spouse cry, and I hate children. That's the perception.
Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And you have a leaky butt.
You have a leaky butt.
Yeah, a leaky ass.
Do it for our children. He just runs out.
And then I get in the car. I drive home. I got to calm down. I'm by myself. I just got to just breathe and get home. That's what I do.
You're probably running this scenario in your mind over and over again.
He did. And then he called me. Listen to this.
All right. I was
yelling at this drugstore? No, because people looking at you.
They weren't looking at me. They were looking at you.
Oh, they were looking at me. I was hiding.
What were you thinking?
I got to get the hell out of here. How am I going to get out of here? I need an exit strategy. I got to get the...
That's so great.
That's what I say every time you do something. How do I get out of this? I have to get out of this without being embarrassed.
But what did you see me crying and apologizing to the people?
Yeah. Everything. He's piling it on. People are pointing their cameras at me. And I'm always the guy they look at.
Yeah. Yeah.
He made them cry. That's what they're saying.
Yes, they did. Yeah, we were a couple having a fight in public.
Yeah, we were a couple having a fight in the Rite Aid.
You both should try and tame that.
There's probably some of the same people, too. That's got to happen eventually. Hey, it's those guys from the hardware store. Same guys. It's the same guys.
They fight everywhere.
Oh, God.
You guys are nine.
Nine.
God, is that funny.
No, wait. Whoa, 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 whoa. He's nine. I'm the parent.
Hey, you still walk with him.
I have to. Where am I going? We're creating. We got got work to do. I have no choice. This is the hand I've been dealt. Shit, what am I going to do with this hand?
But the funniest thing was you had no idea what was going on until those people turned around and looked at you. And your eyes got huge. And you didn't know what to do.
Yeah, because I never know what's happening until I'm right in the middle. That's when I know something's happening. When oh, shit. Okay, we're doing this one. Okay. All right. I thought we were getting pens, but we're not. He's fucking with me. This is what it is. What's going to happen now? I might as well just go up to the people. Listen, just please excuse him. In a couple of minutes, some things are going to happen.
Look, I don't know what it is.
So you're saying that he doesn't adapt well.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, I'm going to prepare now. Every time we go somewhere, I'm going to make an announcement. Everybody, listen up.
Just
in a couple of
cards.
Minutes, some crazy shit's going to go down. Just mind your business, buy your groceries, and don't worry about it. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see.
Whatever it is, it's not my fault.
Yeah. Whatever it is, just go with it.
Yeah. Don't encourage him.
There might be some tears. I mean, you were crying. Who does that? We're not doing a scene. What are you doing?
Nice A game, Adam.
Yes.
Jesus. Cut.
He cut so mad.
We're moving on.
I was really crying. This woman
was.
This woman came over.
I walked outside. I was like, you're crying. Are those real tears? Yes. How do you do that?
Great. You are beautiful. Oh, Phil, I'm just saying, you had a plan to spend a day with your pal. You just should have maybe been prepared. I'm going to send you Buzzy's book so this doesn't happen again.
All right. I'll give you one thing. You're a good actor.
I had a good time talking to Buzzy. Listen to this, and we'll see you on the other side.
Have fun. Getting out and enjoying yourself. That's what life is all about. And it's easy when you have the best bladder control protection.
What size are you again?
You're listening to the Adam Ferrara podcast. This is 30 minutes you'll never get back.
I'm up to here with this crap.
Hi, guys. I got some stand-up dates for you. December 10th through the 12th, I will be at Hilarities in Cleveland, Ohio. December 18th and 19th, I will be at the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. And for New Year's Eve, I will be at the Helium in St. Louis. If you can make any of these dates, please come up after the show and let me thank you for all the love and support you've shown me and this podcast. All right. Go on, get out of here. Let's listen to Buddy.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Pay attention when I'm talking to you, boy.
ADHD, it's not just for kids.
Nice boy, but doesn't listen to a word you say.
Welcome to the ADD interview. It's not that you're not interesting, it's just that I can't focus. And my guest this week is...
Oh, look, a bird!
I'll take my guest this week for 100, Adam. And the answer is, this 9-time Jeopardy champion and winner of the 2017 Tournament of Champions is a music executive by trade and seems to be a boundary pusher by nature. His new audible book is called Get Ready. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Who is Buzzy Cohen?
How are you, Buzzy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Oh, thanks for being on. Okay, let's first things first, you Jeopardy champion. How much cash did you walk away with?
The total is a little bit north of $400,000.
That's a nice neighborhood to be in, baby.
I won about $167,000 the first time I was on over those 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter of a million for winning the Tournament of Champions.
That's great.
And then I got another $25,000 when I made a wild card spot in the Jeopardy All-Stars.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Now. You're a smart guy, and it's not just because you're wearing glasses, obviously. Jersey kid, right?
Yep.
Newark, New Jersey. You're out in Los Angeles now.
Yep.
In New York, basically, the 7 o'clock and 7:30 game show on was mm-hmm. Jeopardy at 7 o'clock in New York.
Yep.
And then after you feel stupid because you couldn't answer anything, they put on Wheel of Fortune to make it easier for you.
That's right. So, yeah, 7 o'clock. Growing up, I would always watch Jeopardy. And I used to also at 7 o'clock on Fox, mm-hmm. there were Simpsons reruns.
Yep.
And I knew the exact length of time of the, like, internally, I'd internalize the length of time of the Jeopardy commercial break. And I would flip to the Simpsons and always be back right on time for the next round of Jeopardy.
That's okay. So you were a smart kid. So you were drawn to Jeopardy. And
yeah,
that was it. Yeah, I would do Jeopardy. I could answer once in a while. And then when Wheel of Fortune would kick in, you'd guess letters, you feel better. Because my mother actually, I'll be honest with you, Buzzy, my mother couldn't take it. It was too much pressure for my mother to watch.
Which, Jeopardy?
No,
or
Wheel of Fortune. She'd be yelling at the TV. It's a W!
Yeah.
Yes, an L. The Lizard of Oz. That's what they're trying to spell. Okay,
playing someone is playing a very deep game if they're going for an L for the Lizard of Oz. Very yeah. deep game.
So I got to ask, how does one, do you apply for it? Do you send an audition tape? How did you, what's the process to get on Jeopardy?
My whole arc was like, I really love Jeopardy. I did some like high school trivia stuff. I kind of fell out of it when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved out here. I got bunny ears for my TV so that we could watch the Academy Awards. And all of a sudden, because I'm like a early cable cutter, no cable or anything. And so I couldn't watch live TV. And there wasn't any streaming Jeopardy. So I got the bunny ears for the Academy Awards. And then all of a sudden I could watch Jeopardy again every night.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an ad, like a little promo, like, hey, take the Jeopardy quiz in 2 months or 6 weeks or whatever it was. And I just signed up on a whim.
Okay.
Took the test. A few months later, got called in for an in-person audition, took another test, did kind of a mock game interview kind of thing. And then they called me in to be on the show. Now, that's not the way it goes for a lot of people. A lot of very famous Jeopardy contestants have had to take the test multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And actually right now they've changed it. So anytime you want, you can sign up and take the test online. It used to be like, once a year, everybody took it at the same time online. Now they have some system where you can just log on and take a test. It's 50 questions. Yeah.
50 questions. So you passed. It's like your driver's test, but you passed the first time.
Yeah.
Usually.
I think it was a combination of the fact that I did well enough on the test, but I also showed up for my audition in a 3-piece suit. I like kind of trash talked a little bit when I was there. They really drive home at the audition process that it's a game show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the, you know, foreign service exam, or you're not sitting for the bar. And a lot of people take it really, really seriously. And they're looking for people who are comfortable in their own skin, can have fun, ready for TV, all that stuff.
Well, yeah, that was one of the things that I loved is when you said having fun is you foregoed betting money to mess with Alex Trebek.
That's right. Yeah. But I wasn't foregoing the money. The thing that people don't realize about the experience of taping Jeopardy is that they tape 5 shows in one day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was starting at 10 a.m. taping a show. I won, had to run backstage, change outfits, come back 10 minutes later, do another show. I mean, it's obvious to people who have ever done a TV show, but to viewers at home, it's not obvious.
Yeah.
And so what I realized was it's such a grueling and intense experience that if I had a locked game and I knew I was going to win no matter what, I would rather just bet zero and have another 10 or 15 minutes to rest.
Right.
And really, that was what it was about. Making, like, kind of poking fun at Trebek is just who I am. It's like more like that's like my natural state is kind of having fun with people. And so the impulse wasn't to have fun with Trebek, but it sort of ended up being what people remembered. The impulse was really just to take a few minutes off.
Right. Okay. So to catch people up, the way you messed with Trebek was you bet zero, so you wouldn't lose anything. And you wrote messages to Alex on the screen that he would have to read on television.
Correct. So I wrote things like, see you tomorrow, Trebek. What is, you aren't rid of me yet, Trebek. And then the last one I wrote was, what is once more, Trebek, once more.
That's funny. And did he find it funny?
He did. Yeah, he did. And he's very aware of all the like SNL parodies and all of this other stuff. And so he would start saying like, hey, I need you guys to the other contestants. Like, can somebody beat this guy so I don't have to deal with his, you know, shenanigans anymore? I think he was sort of like trying to figure me out a little bit. And as I said, it's 5 shows in a day. So really, it was 2 consecutive days that I was there with him doing all kinds of stuff. I was doing the joke things. I was like, you know, brushing the dirt off my shoulder in the intro. When I came back for the Tournament of Champions, I think there'd also been another contestant who was sort of like me named Austin Rogers, who was also kind of outlandish. And I think he kind of figured out like, oh, this is fun. This is cool. People have a good time with this. The audience enjoys it. And he started having more fun with us as well.
Yeah, because you have a, you know, you're a smart guy. You got to be smart to be on there. You have a personality. So that's 2 things that are pretty rare. And you got an attitude because you're from Jersey.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And Buzzy Cohen is just great. Buzzy Cohen is just like, it's like you helped found Vegas. That man's
exactly,
name was Buzzy Cohen, you know?
Yes, I was, you know, I made my money running liquor from Canada and then, you know, invested that in hotels.
Yeah, you're the champion, right? And the structure is you come back to play in the Tournament of Champions. Now, during that time, you changed your training style.
Correct, yeah. So what I realized was, the way that I had been preparing to be on the show the first time, which is what most people do, sitting on the sofa, watching the show every day, maybe TiVoing a couple so I can, you know, if I miss one, I can do a couple in a row with like a ballpoint pen so you can practice kind of that, you know, that responsive clicking.
Oh, that's the thing. Let me ask you about the buzzer before I get distracted.
Yeah.
How come the buzzer doesn't work for some people and they get pissed off?
If you buzz in before Alex Trebek finishes reading the question, your buzzer gets locked out for a quarter of a second, which is kind of a long time.
Yeah.
So if you buzz in and you're locked out, you're trying to get it to go. And if someone else has buzzed in, you've lost it, but like you're still trying to get in. And there's that time between that person buzzing and Alex Trebek calling their name when you still don't know that you're not.
So
in.
It's a timing thing. Do they tell you that before, or is that something you've just,
yes.
They tell
you how the buzzer works, and you get a decent amount of time during rehearsals when you get there. And then again, after lunch using the buzzer, they put old boards up. One of the contestant coordinators reads the questions and they give you a lot of time and they make sure that everyone's kind of at least figured it out to some extent.
Okay. So that was one of the things that you had to get used to in the training of it and in the rehearsal of it. That's one of the things I loved in your book, and the book is called Get Ready. It's on Audible. I highly recommend it. One of the things you mentioned was content versus context. The content is what you have to provide for the game show. The context is the environment, and most people overlook that.
Correct. Yeah. So what I found was that a lot of people study a lot of material for Jeopardy, but they forget about the fact of the internal and external environment that they're going to need to be able to come up with that. So the external environment are things like the time of day and things like standing versus sitting. I consider that like an external environmental mm-hmm. thing. The internal environment is really your emotional state, right? And it's much more stressful being on the show with an audience, two other contestants who know stuff, facing Alex Trebek, who for some people, he's, you know, the biggest star in the world, for Jeopardy nerds at the very least. Mm-hmm. It's all just, it's, you're in a totally different state than 7 p.m. sitting on the couch playing against your dog when you can pause the TiVo and try to come up with something. And so what I did was I integrated as much of the context of the show experience into my preparation. So mm-hmm. I would record the shows, I would study, do all my stuff at the time of day when the show taped. Because as you know, and as I know, my brain at 10 a.m. is very different from my brain at 7 p.m.
Right.
So my ability to recall stuff. So I was like, I need to prepare with that in mind. I would go to the gym and
so you would set your body, because if you block shooting, your call time is, you know, 8 o'clock.
7 a.m.
Okay. So you block shooting. So to be at the studio at 7, you're up at 5, 6, getting ready, doing what you got to do. So you're there. So you set your body clock to be that. That's very smart.
I was doing all kinds of training, and I wasn't like all of a sudden doing it all at once, but about a month before tape date, I started waking up at the time I knew I was going to have to wake up mm-hmm. for the show, just to get used to that. Like, I'm not a morning person, so 6 a.m. or 5:30 or whatever, it doesn't get easier for me necessarily, but at least I was familiar with it. I kind of knew I had it. It was part of my routine, right? And that's a big thing that I did, was the things that are really unique about the experience of Jeopardy, I tried to make them routine. So wearing a suit and tie every day mm-hmm. is not a routine for most people, but a lot of people want to do it for Jeopardy, or wear nicer clothes than they're used to. And all of a sudden they're wearing clothes that they haven't worn in a long time, maybe don't fit the way they thought they would. They're futzing with stuff, and all that stuff has an effect on you, right? Like, if someone has to help you tie your tie, I mean, that's not like the most confident building experience right before you're supposed to go out on stage and fulfill a lifelong dream.
Yeah.
So I wore a suit and tie every day for like a year. Well, I knew for about a year that I was going to go back on the show.
See, that's smart. People don't even think about it. And there's a lot of that stuff in the book. You read Sun Tzu, The Art of War?
Yeah.
Know the environment. Know the thing. And know how the internal and the external world does that. For me, what I learned, Buzzy, is when I was doing stand-up for the first time on TV, you know, late-night TV, you're backstage. And you're backstage alone. And you're backstage alone with, you know, the when I did Letterman, you're backstage with Biff. He's standing.
Right.
So you walk out and there's all that energy that you have to adapt to. Now, I did the James Corden show recently. Uh-huh. So here's what I do, is I'll stand backstage behind the curtain while they're in commercial and the band is playing, and I'll poke my head out so the audience sees me, and they'll go, and they wave, they clap, they wave, because they know I'm coming out. So I've already made a joke, and I've made myself comfortable by making a joke to them already, and I've invited them into this thing we're going to do together. So when they start clapping and pointing, I go, all right, just wanted to say, ho, knock it off, I'll be out in a minute. And that was... So that's more for me. So when I read your book, I went, oh, I did the same thing. So I was very excited to hear you do that in your training. You also worked out and had your trainer ask you questions.
Yeah. So I was trying to figure out how to get as close to the experience of being on stage, knowing you know something mm-hmm. and not being able to come up with it, which is an experience we all have in different ways. But everybody who's been on Jeopardy has had that. I missed the question that I know so well. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just, you know, like, you've got a lot of stress hormones going on. There's a lot of pressure, and your brain isn't necessarily putting resources towards the kind of memory that you need to come up with that information, right? Your brain is trying to figure out, what are my exits? How much danger am I in? All that other kind of stuff.
Do I have
right?
to pee?
What's the threat? Do I have to pee? All that stuff. And so what I did was, I actually realized this on a trip to Disneyland, and I talk about this a little bit in the book. I went down Splash Mountain, and I told my wife right afterwards, if somebody had been asking me trivia questions while I was going down Splash Mountain, that would be the closest thing to the experience of being on the show. Hmm. And of course, I couldn't actually like do that. But what I realized was that kind of like brain going blank thing that was happening to me when I'd be at the gym and having to like hold the top of a chin up or hold a plank or push a sled when you're like really exerting and you just feel like I'm going to die. and I just need to hold on. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that place, somebody can ask you really simple questions. Someone could ask you to spell your name and you're like, and it might be hard, right?
Right.
Like your whole body is shutting down, and getting to that place is hard. So what I did was I would hand my trainer a stack of flashcards, or I would hand him a trivia book and hang from the chin-up bar and be like, ask me. And I'd already studied the stuff, so I knew it. But what I was doing was learning how to get through that mind blank moment and get back to my information.
Yeah, that's the thing in the book that I thought was very valuable, or, and you articulated something that I was feeling, is when you train for something, you're not making an uncomfortable situation or experience or thought or reaction go away.
Right.
You're not making it going away. You're giving yourself tools to deal with it and not letting it throw you when it comes up.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I think that it's really hard to get rid of stress. And I say this actually, one of the things that I think is important is like anything that is important to us, we're going to be stressed, because if it's important to us, the stakes are probably high. Anything that's important to you has some stakes.
Anything you're trying to do or acquire, it's fear and desire. Fear and desire causes suffering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what I say is like, you know, there are people who do, you know, like meditation before they go on Jeopardy, or try to like go Zen before a big presentation. And I'm not saying that stuff isn't helpful. I'm just saying what happens when something goes wrong and then the stress rushes back. And so what I did was just get myself familiar and figuring out how to deal with it. Exactly like you said.
Yeah. That's Tyson. Everyone's got a plan till they get punched in the mouth.
Exactly. Exactly. And I use that quote to open one of the chapters, because like plans are very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, you know, one of the most important chapters in the book, it's like the first or second chapter, is planning versus preparing. Planning is a work of fantasy, right? It's a positive fantasy. Like, I'm going to do this and then this is going to happen. I'm going to do this and then this is going to happen. And that's all well and good until you get punched in the mouth, right?
Yeah.
Until something goes wrong. And then all of a sudden your plan is kaput. And so plans are very useful, but I think preparing is actually thinking about what could go wrong and organizing yourself around that. And if the things don't happen, great. But if they do happen, you're ready. I'm applying this right now with Corona, right? So, mm-hmm. So my wife and I are in this situation where we've got a young kid, you know, until August something, her school said we're going back in person. And then all of a sudden they're like, we're back on Zoom. And Zoom didn't work for our kids. So we're like, oh, do we do this? Do we try the Zoom while they see if they figure it out? They're trying to come back. And my wife and I realized, like, what's the worst case scenario? Is that schools don't come back this year. So well, let's plan for that. What does that look like? Make a plan according to that. And then if schools come back, great. We'll have something to address then. But right now we have a plan that carries us through a worst case scenario.
Yeah. What I found helped me is in the moment when the plans don't work, or in the moment when something doesn't go the way you want to, is not to beat the shit out of myself because why did I let that happen? Because that's an illusion of control.
Right.
It's like, all right, what can I make out of this? What's next? That happened. That moving forward and moving forward towards the goal, and seeing the need for me to change my outlook on an event.
Right.
So I wanted to ask you this. You were the 9-time champion. You won.
Yeah.
What made you change your approach to the tournament of champions since you achieved success?
Well, my question,
why mess with something that worked?
Well, there was a lot of luck involved. Like, I had a lot of skating by. In the second week, I started having runaway games, but the first week was really touch and go. Like, I almost lost in my second game. I had a lucky break in my fourth game. I didn't win very decisively, and I realized that the level of competition was going to go up. And I also had more information now, right? Like, I had more information about what the experience of the show was going to be. So why wouldn't I apply that to how I prepared myself?
Smart, smart. I can only liken this to my business, Buzzy.
Yeah.
The comics I started with all had a fear of learning acting because we thought we weren't going to be funny anymore. In other words, we thought that this is what I can do. And if I do something different, I won't be able to do that. It's something that keeps you from moving forward. And you had in your book, perceived wisdom and received wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really interesting. Received wisdom, if I'm understanding you correctly, is stuff that you're told and you would accept as truth. Perceived wisdom is what you think might happen, but there's no real basis for it. Is that accurate?
Well, there's also the received wisdom of what they tell you or what you think about what people tell you to do to get ready for something, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, read your speech, in the mirror or something like that.
Right.
And that's what someone tells you. For me, the perceived wisdom is like I was then on the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have this experience that's informing what I'm going to do in a much more important way. Like sitting on the couch with a buzzer clicking along to the show didn't stop being part of my preparation.
Right.
Well, sitting on the couch did. I stopped sitting on the couch when I was doing it. But watching the show with a pen clicking, because I had this perception that like, oh, I need to actually prepare. I don't have to prepare to know the things on Jeopardy. I have to prepare to compete on the game show of Jeopardy.
Smart.
Right?
Smart. You change the command. You change the goal.
And one of the things that I really try to push people, and just to be clear, the book is, as you know, not just about getting ready for Jeopardy. I end up doing all this other stuff. I interviewed a bunch of people, and it's really about preparing for all these different situations that we find ourselves in all the time. But one of the things I ask people to do is really understand what you need to do. If it's knowing a bunch of information, then yes, studying out of books at any time is fine. If it's competing, standing up under lights, in your dress clothes, wearing heels at 10 a.m., that's a very different task, a very different thing to prepare for than simply knowing a bunch of stuff.
All right, but let's be honest, Buzzy, wearing heels at 10 a.m., that's a little trampy, no?
Well, I have a little heel on my dress shoe.
You tease. Okay, and just to get back to the book, to clarify for the book, because you're absolutely right, and I want to make sure that the people listening know how valuable it is. It's more or less like a reference material or a travel guide, if you will.
Yeah.
It's one of the things.
That's kind of how I talk to people about it. It's like a travel guide for preparing for anything. And the idea is you'll listen through it. And like a travel guide, if you're going to Italy, you might flip through the whole thing. But once you decide, oh, I'm only going to Rome and Naples, you don't have to read the sections on Florence and Venice.
But what I took from it that I really liked is identifying an opportunity. That spoke to me because, and I'll tell you, I went back to a James Brown quote that I love. James Brown, 68, when he was like at his height, he bought a bunch of radio stations. He was at the height. It was just James Brown, baby. And he was doing an interview. He was in an interview, and he said, "He goes, oh, I'm not black and I'm not white. I'm a taxpayer."
Mm.
He goes, "There's opportunities out there, baby. You find them, and then that's what success is cashing in on that opportunity."
Yeah, I recently heard someone say something that really I thought was great, which was, "Luck is just the combination of a prepared person and an opportune moment."
Yeah, when luck meets preparation, preparation means opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, I got anxiety and depression and everything. And I always found when I'm in a depressed state, it's because I don't see an opportunity. It's a consuming darkness. So if I look at something as an opportunity to put my creative energy into and to take action of, it gets me out of it. So the first step in that is identifying the opportunity.
And kind of going back to what you said about the challenge, like when something goes wrong, being able to move forward. You know, in my Tournament of Champions, I had a really bad first day of the finals, but I was able to kind of like let that be in the past, focus on what was coming up. I had an opportunity. I hit it. I was in the lead, hit a daily double, and realized that that was the moment that I could seize to bet it all. And, you know, I was already in last place going into that day. So if I ended up in last place, that's fine. Or third place. But if I hit it, then all of a sudden I'm back in this.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would say, I've had such a bad game today. Maybe this isn't the. It's like, no, that's the opportunity. That's the one you have to seize on. And this isn't in the book, but getting ready for the Tournament of Champions, the other thing I did was watch the movie Creed like once a week. And there's Rocky in training Creed says, one punch at a time, one step at a time, one punch at a time, one round at a time. And that was really how I approached everything. It's like, one clue at a time, one round at a time, one game at a time. Like just, it's not about, oh, what am I going to do in the next? It was just like, I'm right here doing what I need to do.
Yeah, take the next step, but also be up in the crow's nest to see what's right. coming. It's like when you said, I have an opportunity of a daily double. I got to bet this all. It's like right. being at a crap table, and when the crap table's rolling, you got to press your bets on those numbers. My father told me, I was at a poker machine once, and I was in a casino. He came by, and I wasn't betting the full amount, and he goes, you're just pissing away an opportunity. I'm like, yeah. What are you talking about? He says, you hit a kill time, you hit a play. If you hit a play, you bet the maximum, because if you only got two or three coins in and you hit the royal flush, you didn't win $1,000. You lost out on $25,000.
Yeah. Right.
So you hit a play.
I mean, I actually used like little fake gambling game apps on my phone, Craps specifically, because that's my favorite game. Part of the Craps game was, you know, seeing these big numbers swing in and out of your pot and realizing it's just points. You're just playing until you win. That's what people say. You know, the real, like the game theory Jeopardy people are like, it's all points until you win. When you win, it's money.
Right.
And that goes into your bank. But people are, you know, when you think about it, it's like, oh, I'm going to lose 2,000 of my dollars or 4,000 of my dollars.
Yeah.
It's not your money. You know,
it's, well, it's not money yet.
It's not money yet. Exactly. So you got to play it as the game. And the game, basically, what I learned in the way I played was that you make a very big bet or you make a very small bet.
Mm.
Very rarely is there a situation where you want to make a bet somewhere in the middle.
Yep. Fortunes favor the brave, baby.
Yeah.
Let me ask
Unless you're in a situation where it's like, hey, that's a dumb risk to take, bet the minimum.
Yeah.
You know, because there are situations in the game, and it's just recognizing which situation you're in.
Mm-hmm. How did this experience change you?
I think the big thing from this whole thing was I realized how doing really concerted preparation could really take myself to another level. Mm-hmm. Before the Tournament of Champions, the previous Tournament of Champions winner, who is a big like sabermetrics baseball, you know, gambling guy. He basically handicapped the field for the Tournament of Champions. And I was like second or third from the bottom.
Right.
Because I underperformed, right? Like I had wins, but they weren't these dominant wins. I had a lot of wins, but they were sort of like, you know, I would sort of skate by. I wasn't like going out there just beating the shit out of the opponents. I was just winning. And at the Tournament of Champions, if you look at those same metrics, I played so much stronger than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, what was the difference? I was able to really improve my performance based on this approach. And so I started applying it to a bunch of other things. And it just kind of made me realize, like, I think we have this idea of our own strengths and weaknesses, limitations. And I think it's a combination of, I mean, obviously resources are a big thing. Not everyone can spend the time and energy and in some cases money on doing certain things. But I think it's also an outlook. It's like, oh, I want to get great at tennis. Well, what are you doing? Oh, well, I go and I hit balls with my friend every week. Well, you're probably not going to get better at tennis if that's what you're doing. You know, mm-hmm. you have to really apply a pedagogical approach.
Buzzy, I got to look up pedagogical. Hold on. What is a big vocabulary?
Well, you know, they have those, you know, like 12 letter word categories in Jeopardy. So you got to learn some of those. But yeah, I mean, I think the idea is like you need to have a program. You need to understand what you need to work on. And I've since done a bunch of other things and am still kind of having fun collecting hobbies.
Well, this is why I wanted to ask you, because you finished this, you have this new sense of confidence, you have this plan, and you have this formula, if you will, this theory on how to achieve things. So you asked your trainer, well, how long would it take for me to deadlift? And how much did you deadlift?
I ended up deadlifting a little over 400 pounds.
Okay. And that was a goal?
That was the goal. I ended up, I wanted to get a lot more than that, but I actually had a back injury along the way.
You know why? Because you were trying to deadlift 400 pounds, Cohen.
I was trying, to deadlift 500 pounds, but I ended up entering an amateur deadlifting competition. Some of your listeners may know people at their gyms who are deadlifting a lot more. And what I'll say is the competition I participated in was drug tested.
Right.
That'll give you some context. I ended up winning my weight class, my weight and age class for the AAU powerlifting competition.
Wow.
Deadlifting 400 pounds. From starting out, I'd never deadlifted before. So that was where I started. I started at zero.
That's great. Well, what made you choose deadlifting, if I can ask you?
it's kind of random, but you know, the trainer who started the gym that I go to, which is over near my house, mm-hmm. when he was like younger, he did a little bit of bodybuilding, and then he did a deadlifting competition, and he won again for his weight class. So he had a trophy up in the front, and I was like, if I did that, like, could I do that? Could I win that trophy? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, we need like 8 or 9 months. And so I signed up that day, basically. I found a competition 9 months out and signed up.
Thank God you saw that. I mean, you know, there could have been a lot of other things, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, I get fanatical about it a little bit because I'm also trying to figure it out, you know, and I'm putting a lot of energy and effort. It keeps me out of trouble, though. So my wife's like, I'm very happy if what you're doing is going to the gym 4 days a week versus, you know, going out and partying or I don't know what I'll, you know. Going to Vegas, which yeah. is something I also like to do.
Yeah. So you would say this experience and going through this training has provided you more confidence, self-esteem, self-worth?
Definitely. Definitely. Look, winning the Jeopardy Tournament of Champions, talk about a confidence booster. Mm-hmm. You know, winning a game on Jeopardy. When I first went on Jeopardy, I just wanted to make it to the final Jeopardy. I don't want to be negative and not get to play. Mm-hmm. And it turned into this whole other thing. And there was always a part of me that was like, well, I got really lucky and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But when you win the Tournament of Champions, luck is part of it, but you got to, like we said, you got to take those opportunities. You got to play hard, put yourself in that position where you can get lucky.
Okay. Now in Final Jeopardy, do they come by and put those dividers up between you or do they make you put them up?
No, the dividers are actually electronic.
Ah.
So there's a little switch that puts them up. And now I think because of COVID, they've spread out the lecterns so that you're not all next to each other to create more social distance. You know, what's interesting though, is they tell you if it's going to be a what or a who.
Oh, okay.
I think basically so that you don't get disqualified for not phrasing it in the form of a question. So they say right on the upper left, you know, what, mm-hmm. which doesn't really tell you anything, but.
Right. It just helps you with the phrase. Now, do they give you, before you go into the show, do they give you the categories to study?
No, they give you nothing.
They give you nothing. So you could be reading about the French Revolution and the categories could be automotive maintenance.
Absolutely. And actually, when I went back for All-Stars, we decided, you know, I was on a team at that point, which was the first time they had done that. And I looked it up when it was going to be airing to find out what events, because, you know, if it's like, you know, around St. Patrick's Day, they might do a Luck of the Irish and it's like an Irish history
right.
category. So I realized it was right before the Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, there's going to be an Academy Awards category. And I memorized best picture, best actor, best actress, best director for every year. And of course, there was no Academy Awards category.
You outsmarted yourself, Cohen.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, I talk about this a little bit in the book, like sometimes having that information can help you contextualize other things, right? Mm-hmm. So even if they're not asking about Grand Hotel, they might say like, you know, they might have a question and it mentions, I want to be alone, and they're looking for
Greta Garbo. I'm sorry, who is Greta Garbo?
Exactly. Okay. So it's like having that, you know, it's basically a scaffolding, sometimes those sorts of things that you can then connect to more useful information.
The book is called Get Ready. Give my listeners the biggest thing that they can take from this book, or the biggest message you would like to communicate with this book.
I think that all of us want to do as well as we can in all these situations that we find ourselves in our life that matter to us. And even if we know we should be preparing for them, we don't always know how to approach that preparation. And this book is really about helping you get into the mindset, not telling you necessarily how to prepare specifically for your thing, but how to figure out how you can prepare for it.
That was great. I will need you to form it in the phrase of a question, though.
Yeah. What is stop failing? I mean, look, like even things that go well, I think a lot of times we're like, oh, I wish that had gone better. Mm-hmm. That could have gone a little bit better. And this is just about helping you get a little bit better or a lot better for all these things that you want to do great in. We all want to do great. Yeah. Giving a speech at our friend's wedding or whatever.
Yeah, I found it a very useful and helpful guide. It's available on Audible. It's an audiobook. I think you do a great job in it. It's very clear and it was very helpful. And I thank you for spending time with me.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I can't wait to hear what you and your listeners apply it to. And that's been really fun as well. So thank
I'm going
you
to
so
Vegas
much.
And I'm applying it to the crap table. I'm telling you right now. Continued success to you, Buzzy. Best to you and the family.
Thank you.
The Adam Ferrara Podcast is brought to you by CruiseIntoWellness.com. Let's say you had a tough day at the Rite Aid.
And then I get in the car, I drive home. I got to calm down.
Do what I do. Take one of the gummies they have at CruiseIntoWellness.com. They also have edibles, tinctures, pain creams, bath products, pet products, and it's all made from hemp right here in the USA. They have the bath bubbly thing, a favorite of my wife. And I'll tell you what, 20% off with the coupon code Adam. 20% off anything they have at CruiseIntoWellness.com. Go, feel better.
I'm Buzzy Cohen, and that was 30 minutes. I will never get back.
I really enjoy talking to Buzzy.
Yeah, I like the first question you asked. How much money did you make?
Yeah, how'd you do?
Yeah, it's Adam. Yeah. So let me be clear on this, Adam. So you're talking to this highly intelligent human being who won Jeopardy 9 times, mm-hmm. and you're yeah, you ask him, hey, how do they put those dividers up?
Sure.
That's what you ask him. Yeah. That's what you want to know about.
Well, I just didn't know if someone's looking at him like, you're not looking at my paper. But they go up automatically. So, yeah. So there's no trust from the producers.
Oh, there's no human behind them.
No.
You know, there's a Teamsters guy who's saying, my job should be to turn the wheel and raise those things.
Excuse
right?
me. That's excuse me. Idea. Don't touch that. I'm the one.
Yeah. All right. I'm so blown away by the way he prepared. Mm-hmm. Like having his trainer fire questions at him while he's doing pull-ups, you know, like that's standing nice. Up while he's watching the show, just getting your body and mind ready to do battle. It was just, it was so comprehensive.
The brilliant thing for me was setting his body clock. I'm like, oh, that's smart.
Yes.
Because I remember we were shooting Nights. What the hell movie was it? We were in Boston.
Mall Cop.
Yeah. We were shooting Nights in Boston. So we didn't go to bed till 6 in the morning.
Vampires.
Yeah. And then so we would come home. Alex would take a bath at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I would.
Normal people are going to work and I'm going to bed. So, and because I got to be up, you know, call time is like midnight and we're shooting all through the night or 10 o'clock, whatever it was. So, yeah. So setting the body clock, I thought was brilliant. But that's what he was talking about. The context in which you do stuff in. It's preparing yourself. It's like when you shoot a multi-camera, which is the like the sitcom with the audience, mm-hmm. you rehearse, you know, you block and tape, but you rehearse all week. So you're doing the same scene. So I would go to wardrobe early and I would wear the wardrobe because you would find funny in the clothes. You could find funny, you know, being in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's what he's talking about when he's like, I wanted to wear this suit because maybe I don't wear a suit all the time. And so mm-hmm. I'm going to be wearing this there. And you know how that is. It's like, it feels funny. And you're thinking about how you're feeling in the suit as opposed to like, I'm ready for these questions. I'm ready to dominate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that spoke to me more than anything when he talked about wearing the suit. All because if you don't normally wear a suit at your job, and then now you're in your job, or you know you're on a show like Jeopardy, and now you're forced to wear a suit, it can make you very stiff and uncomfortable, and really take you out of your normal routine. You know, and so it's key. And when I did Leno, when I was going over that set in comedy clubs, like over and over again, I wore a suit in the clubs, no matter if there was 100 people or 2, because I wanted to get comfortable in that suit because I don't wear a suit. I don't wear a suit ever.
Right.
You know, and by the time I did the show, I was comfortable in the suit. So when he said that, I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. And you had the ugliest tie I've ever seen.
It was your tie.
I gave you my tie.
I know. You were fucking with me then.
No, I wasn't fucking with you. I didn't want you going on TV like you look like a guy couldn't guess your weight. All right.
What? Oh, stop it.
It was the ugliest friggin' tie in the world. And I said, you're not wearing that on TV. What's the matter? I've been rehearsing this tie. I go, the rehearsal's over. Here's your show tie. I took my tie off and I gave it to him.
Would it have a moose on it?
It was stupid. It was some friggin'
have a moose on it.
Yeah. It was some knit tie. Did your grandmother knit that or some shit?
No, Barry's guy gave it to me. I don't know.
Give it back.
I got dressed. They dressed me.
Yeah, those aren't good.
No, it was terrible.
Or whatever.
You know what I would do? I would watch game tape.
Of.
I would get the best of.
Right.
And just watch other people and learn from them.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah, that's a good call.
And because I didn't know that the buzzer was that important.
Oh, yeah.
And you get timed out.
Yeah.
That stinks.
I just knew people would flip out. You would see him pushing a button. Son of a bitch!
Yeah.
You would just see him.
Yeah, my buzzer's broken!
Yeah. This is bullshit! Trebek!
I would complain too.
Their whole body convulsed.
Yeah.
You're screwing me, Trebek! Yeah. I had that!
I could have been on a Price is Right, and I'm here doing this. It's fixed. It's fixed.
Yeah, I didn't know about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's why I wanted to ask him. Mm-hmm. And you know what else he did? Is he had the courage to change when he stepped up to the Tournament of Champions.
Rather How
than
about go, that?
Yeah.
Because he had gotten to the tournament champ. Like, he had won. Mm-hmm. And in his mind, he's like, yeah, but I kind of got by, you know, with a little luck and here and there. He's like, if I want to crush this, I got to really step it up. And that's most people just be like, hey, I'm happy to be here, man. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
But he had the mind of a killer, man. It was just, that was really cool to hear.
Yeah, he wasn't clinging to superstition out of fear. He was like, I got to do it this way. I got to do it this way.
You mean he didn't have lucky underwear?
Yeah. Well, lucky underwear. He didn't have a rational adherence to a superstition. You know, he's like, oh, I am confident in my ability to overcome, rather than I don't want to screw anything up. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, Phil, you're kind of superstitious.
I am incredibly superstitious.
I know.
Actually, like with sports, like really superstitious.
Yeah, but even by doing stuff, you're like, I don't want to change anything. I can't. You know, when you were complaining about the insomnia, I go, well, Phil, just don't drink coffee before a show. I got to drink coffee before a show.
It's tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I drink it on stage. I drink coffee on stage.
But you're done with your show at 12 o'clock. You slammed a pot of coffee. I can't sleep. There's something wrong with me. Really?
Caffeine.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it took me years, and you still don't. You still won't go on without having a cup of coffee.
But I'm getting better, though. I don't have it after 6.
Well, it's because you haven't had a show in 6 months.
Yeah, it's true, too. And now I'm drinking a bowl of coffee.
Yeah. Man. But, yeah, having the courage and your ability to overcome is, I think, that's the best part of being prepared. I think.
Well, I think when you are prepared, you kind of have that courage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need to cram. You need to know, like, the capitals of all the worlds and the presidents and all that kind of stuff. That's the obvious.
Yeah, state capital. Yeah, all that stuff.
But then they hit you like, who was the French king during some war?
Yeah.
Whatever.
This insect lives off the larva of other insects.
Oh, my God. I don't know how.
Oh, thank God I read that off the Dixie cup, you know?
That's why I like Wheel of Fortune after that. Are there any wise? Yes.
You know, Adam,
my
secret dream is for us to be on Family Feud.
Me and you?
Well, we have to get the rest of more of the family. But I don't know who we pick.
Our family, your family.
I think your family, because they're more talkative.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Smart.
Your mother on Family Feud? Are you kidding me?
Hold on.
I thought Phil and I were part of your podcast family.
You
don't
are.
We get to go.
We
on
still
the
need
show?
One more. That. It's five people, so it's us four and my mother. Because I want to see Steve Harvey tell my mother she's wrong.
He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
What do you mean I'm wrong? That's my answer. I don't care that it's not up there. It's correct. All right?
The survey is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Survey says. How about what I say?
Yeah. Are you talking to the survey? Are you talking to me, Mr. Mustache?
I love that show. I love Family Feud.
Yeah. You like Family Feud?
I did. I like when Louis Anderson hosted it.
Yeah, Louie was great. We got to get Louie on the show.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, I love Louie. Show me cupcakes.
All right, yeah, hold on.
I would love that.
Come on. But Richard Dawson, the original.
Kissing everybody on the mouth.
I love. It was Newkirk from Hogan's Heroes. I love Richard Dawson.
Yeah. You could tell that he was drinking while he was doing that.
Yeah. Everybody was drinking at game shows in the 70s. Watch Match Game. They have glasses of scotch while they're answering questions.
Yeah. Match Game PN is sponsored by Cirrhosis.
Goodness.
I liked Match Game was one of my favorite. Hollywood Squares was when I was a kid, you'd come home from school, watch the Hollywood Squares, and you thought Paul Lynde was just outgoing. You knew nothing about homosexuality, you just thought he was
Center Square. He was
Center
the guy
Square.
You loved.
Yeah.
You
just gregarious.
He was some guy that just liked boat clothing. That's all you knew. He's there in a captain's hat and an ascot.
Yeah,
he looked like he walked off a Montclair cigarette ad, and he just made me laugh.
I'm a toss-up between Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal.
Oh, yeah?
Because I know Price is Right. I got skills.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so much fun to dress up and search for stuff and, like, carry all this stuck with you just to, you know, and then you have to pick the box and it, all the audience gets involved.
Mm-hmm.
Seems fun.
All right. I'll tell you what. Dress like a chicken. I'll give you $50 for a steak sandwich.
Dress like a chicken.
Couldn't I love that when he'd be like, does anybody have a hard-boiled egg in their pocket? Yeah. And somebody's, I do.
Yeah, a brown one?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will give you $50 if anyone has an adult diaper.
I got fired by Monty Hall.
You did?
What?
I did, yeah. I used to do the warm-up for Let's Make a Deal. Actually, I did the warm-up for Wheel of Fortune, and then I did Let's Make a Deal for one episode. I got fired because I did a Monty Hall joke. Monty Hall had gotten mugged in New York and it was all over the news.
Right.
And when I was doing the warm up, he was there. I introduced him. I said, yeah, he's doing good. He you know, everything's fine from New York. I go, but how do you mug Monty Hall? You know, the guy steps out. He's like, give me all the money. Okay, here's one, two, three, $500 in cash. Now you can keep the money or trade it in for whatever you have in the box, you know, and it kills. Right.
It's great.
So the stage, yeah, it's a great joke. So the stage manager comes over and he goes, Monty didn't like that joke. I'm like, what? Yeah, I don't do any Monty Hall jokes. I go, it killed. And I never went back again.
Okay.
Yep, it never went back again.
It killed your job.
You know what? I'll take the joke. To hell with Monty Hall.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I was ready to go in, too. They're like, yeah, you're not working today.
Oh, man.
Okay.
That's cool.
I'll go spin the wheel then. I spun the wheel one time when I worked for Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, how's it weighted?
Is it heavy?
No, it's light as hell. But you know, in my whole lifetime, I spun it one time just to fool around. Guess what came up?
Bankruptcy.
Bankrupt.
More than once.
There you go.
There you go.
He also said something I thought was interesting about perceived information and received information. Because you're going to ask people advice. Hey, what's it like? What's it like? What's it like? And then when you do something, you get the experience of doing something. So.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to jump in.
Yeah, I just got to jump in and do it. Because you don't, you know, someone's description of you paints a different picture in your head, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like what, I'll tell you, it was like on Top Gear, we had, they put us in electric drag cars, right? So I had an electric drag truck. So the guy said, it's not like, you know, a regular engine. There's no pedal feel. Once you hit it, it's on.
Okay.
So, and there's so much power that comes, because it's instant torque coming from an electric motor. He says, there's so much power when the force goes through the frame of the body, it twists the frame of the truck. So you got to counter steer, because if you step on it, you're pretty much heading into the wall on the left. So
I never hear the stories till now.
Well,
goodness, another death experience.
Well, I stepped on it and I counter steered. And you see, if you look at the episode, you see Tanner and Rudd's face. Yeah. Because I was like really close to the wall because counter steered just enough not to hit the wall.
If I could reach you, I'd hit you.
Yeah.
Goodness.
But that was received information. The perceived information after my experience was this. Holy shit. That was stupid. But I did it in low 11, so I did it about 120 miles an hour. So
well, that
cool.
was good.
Yeah, and in all you hear is the twisting of the metal and me screaming because there's no motor. That's all you hear.
Mm-hmm. Screw you, Tesla. Right?
That's funny. Hmm. So that was the perceived information was the instructions I got. The received information was, now I know how to do it. You know what else I like? When he got done, he was like, what else you got? And he started, his trainer, he trained for 8 months or whatever he said, to deadlift.
Yes.
And I asked him, I said, well, what the hell made you pick that?
Guy had a trophy up. I'm like,
thank God he wasn't a rodeo clown. You know?
What, he's a deadlift champ?
Yeah. He said, I want to train to do this. And he committed himself to it. And I was like, you know, if I was going to commit myself to months for doing something, it wouldn't be deadlifting.
You did. You remember when you boxed?
Oh, yeah, when I was boxing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and my first sparring fight. Because when you're hitting the bag and you start moving, you're like, you're feeling good. You got a hook, you hook jab, you get working on my feet. So I was working on my footwork, and I was in pretty good shape. I said, yeah, my trainer, Clay, said, all right, you want to spar? I said, yes. He got me a sparring guy. I landed a few. I'm like, I'm like, wow, that's great. Then I went out. This guy punched me in the face. And I went, oh, hold it. What the hell am I doing? What are you doing? I said, I'm done with it. What the hell's wrong with you? Cut, stop, that's it.
Cut.
He goes, you were training. I said, I was training because I have a double chin on camera. I'm not trained to fight anybody.
This guy punched me in the face. He's like, "That's that." He goes, "That's what it's about." I go, "Not for me. I'm done. You win."
That's when reality steps in.
That's when reality steps in. I said, "All right, enough with the training. Give me the pie."
Give me the pie.
Enough with the training. Give me the pie.
That was it. I would, if I was going to commit to something for a couple of months from now, I'd plan a robbery.
What? Come that's on, what Adam.
That's what I would do. If I'm going to sit down and map something out, let's take out a Brinks truck.
Right. No.
You know, what I just thought to myself? What is my role in this?
You're the distraction. You're the distraction.
We're gonna be outside?
No, forget the Brinks truck. We're going to hit a Rite Aid. As soon as you walk in, they probably got your face from the security.
Yep. Uh-huh.
They probably go, there he is.
I'll be the one that goes to jail.
There he is.
That's part of the plan, right?
There's the guy that's mean to his husband and is he's incontinent and mean to his husband.
You just want to plan out and have one of those little scales and you build the little Rite Aid.
Yeah.
And you like have a bulletin board.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, this is the plan.
Yes.
That's all you want.
And I want all you guys to come in. You're going to knock out the, cameras. You're the computer lady.
Oh, with the spray paint that goes.
Yeah. You're going to do everything. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to train you so you can like Catherine Zeta-Jones doing the gymnastics through the laser beams.
I don't think Rite Aid has laser beams.
The ones we're robbing are.
Okay.
The one we're going to rob has laser beams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it has Fabergé eggs in the back. That's why we're going to hit it.
Okay.
Mm. All right. Stern?
Yeah.
Chocolate Fabergé eggs.
Chocolate Fabergé eggs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's what you're going
to get them all.
You're going to be the muscle. Start working out.
You got it.
I'm in. You to snap a neck.
Snap a neck.
All right. Phil?
I'm in.
Just whine like you usually do and you'll be fine.
The fuck?
There it is.
Perfect.
You're funny.
I whine when I'm with you. That's when I whine.
And Adam, are you the wheel man?
That's me.
Yeah, you got to be, right? You got to be sitting outside in a car waiting for us.
I'm going to be an electric dragster ready to counter steer when the shock waves go through the frame. Don't you worry.
Yep. Uh-huh. And I'm the one going in. Get in there. I'm the one going in.
Yes, you are.
I'm the one going in.
You're the one screaming.
What was that?
That's Phil getting upset.
What am I saying?
Yeah, I can't make out what you were yelling there, Phil. It sounded like sawbones.
It sounded like all aboard. Sound like all aboard.
Yeah, all aboard, Sorbonne. Maybe it was a Sorbonne. Maybe we're talking about
aboard. Bring out of here. All aboard.
I want to thank my guest, Buzzy Cohen. His book is called Get Ready. Honey, if they want to get a hold of us, where do they go?
TheAdamFerrara@gmail.com.
Yes, and our show's growing, and I want to thank you guys for being such loyal fans. If you get a chance to tell a friend, that will help us out a great deal, as well as leaving a review. Yes, darling?
And if you want to be fan of the week, email us and let us know.
Oh, yeah, okay. If you want a super fan shout-out, email us, let us know. Okay, guys, please remember life is hard. Take it easy on yourself. Pod has ended. Go and be.
And everybody turns their head. And who do they look at? Me! I'm the one standing. No, it's him. He's got it. I don't know what to say.
What's wrong with that man?
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish.
or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.